please. And we'll begin reading in verse 4. Now, everyone look at me. Tonight, don't let all the verses scare you to death. Look at me, friend. 2 Samuel 2, 3, and 4 have one big theme. I think you're going to know what the theme is after we read these verses. We'll see. Verse 4, and the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. Verse 8, but Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Maanaim, and made him king over Gilead and over other things. Verse 10, Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and he reigned 2 years. But the house of Judah, followed David. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was? Chapter 5, please. Chapter 5. Verse 3. So all the elders of Israel came to the king to Hebron, and King David made a league, or a covenant is the better word, it's berit, with them in Hebron before the Lord. And they anointed David king over Israel. And David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for how long? Now, we're going to tonight talk about, we'll read the next verse, but there's only one idea here. Look at me, friend. One idea. Since David has been a kid, he has known he's going to be the king. How's he going to be the king? We're back to that dumb theme that you don't like. Now, what we're going to do tonight is we're going to try to apply it to you. So when you take your stand, and by the way, every Christian has to take stands. Listen, sometimes within your own family, and I think some of us know that, sometimes within a family you have to decide, this is who I am, and I'm not that. And if you can't do that, you don't go very far. So we're really going to talk about here I stand, because David had a principle that I preached on weeks ago, that he would not take the throne by murder. Yes? We're back to that again. It just keeps going on and on. Well, the difference is, from a youth, we don't know exactly how old, maybe a preteen, to age 30, David is running, trying to escape Saul. Finally, he becomes king for a short period of time over Judah, but he's still not king. And he still has opportunity to kill and murder people, but he still won't do it. Verse 4, please. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. So from age 30 to age 37 and a half. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah. Here I stand for you that have good eyes in the muck. Now, we are going to have some humor tonight, because I realize I have been preaching against something for 21 years, and I'm going to guess 2/3 of the people don't know what I'm talking about. So tonight, you will have a visual representation of religious talk. I will not take the kingdom by my own hand. I'll do it in your time and in your way. We see it over and over, and we're back at it again. Help us to hear tonight, because undoubtedly in our life we will have to stand for various things. And it might cost us something. Speak, I ask, in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. Frenchie? Brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. That's the beginning of the story, yes? The beginning of the story is a young boy is anointed king, but he's not yet the king. Chapter 24, verse 4, of course, David, for the first time, has opportunity to kill Saul. It says, I'll just read the highlighted part. One of his friends, do you all know what religious language is, yes or no? You're going to. Here it is. Behold, the day which the Lord said unto thee, Behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it shall seem good unto thee. I love religious language. Verse 6, and he, David, said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stopped his servants with these words, and did not allow, suffered them not to rise against Saul. David has another opportunity. We're no longer in a cave, we're in an entrenchment area where Saul has entrenched for the night. David slips in with Abishai, and Abishai, religious language, said, God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him. Verse 9. David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? The rest of the text is worth reading. Now, look up here. Now we go all the way to 2 Samuel 1. We have the young man that comes. By the way, you've heard this three times tonight. Comes to David thinking he's done David a favor. I have killed Saul. Now, he didn't, but David didn't know that. So let's read verse 13. David said unto the young man, whence art thou? And he said, I am the son of a stranger and Amalekite. And David said unto him, how wast thou not afraid to stretch forth thine hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? And David called one of the young men and said, go near and fall upon him. And he smote him that he died. And David said unto him, thy blood be upon thine head, for thy mouth has testified against thee, saying, I have slain the Lord's anointed. In your notes, we're going to go four straight down and then go to the right four straight down. Here are basic introductory thoughts to this whole section. Number one, it's not numbered. David was chosen by God to be king. We must start there. Secondly, David would ascend to the throne, but the question is, how is he going to do it? How? We knew he was going to be king. How would he do it? I talked to somebody this week. I was at a conference in Rockford. I talked to somebody this week whose name will remain unmentioned. Years ago, Marquette Manor Baptist Church down in the southwest corner of Chicagoland area here had a major kerfluffle. Churches have kerfluffles. And one of the pastors, the assistant pastor, spun out 200 people. Church our size took it out of that church. They were the righteous people. Well, those righteous people haven't had a church in about 10 years. That group of righteous people dissolved. By the way, how are you going to become a pastor? How do you get what you think God wants for you? That's the question. It's always the question. Next, David would not kill Saul. Next, David would not allow others to kill Saul. So, by the way, that's different than the first one, isn't it? It's one thing for me not to do it. It's another thing that if Tim says, oh, I'll do it, hello? You know, somebody comes alongside and says, well, Pastor, you don't want to do it, but who would be like that in this church? Louis Hedas, that's the guy. He's not here tonight. He would be the guy, wouldn't he? The next side of your notes. David resisted all religious justification. Religious justification. Now, I'm glad you're here tonight. Cliffy, would you turn the lights off back here, please? We're going to look at some good old-fashioned Baptist pew. Please listen. God resisted all, what's the word? Religious justification. God has delivered your enemy into your hands. God has done this. Next, David eliminated a young man who said he killed Saul. David didn't know if he did, but he eliminated him anyhow. I see in your notes, and this was an entire sermon a few weeks back, this was one of David's, and I'll use several different words, axioms, givens, predetermined principles. There's other words we could use. So friend, I was this morning over in 208, and we had a young couple and a pretty young, half of a young couple teaching out of rear children this morning. The moment, look at me, you take your stand, Do you think it's going to be easy? What you're going to find is you're going to say, here, this is who I am. And you're going to plant your flag, and you're going to plant your flag, and you're going to say, this is who I am. And then you're going to find out you're right in the middle of all this muck. And if you could just get to someplace, maybe you could change churches. Maybe you could change jobs. Maybe you could move to Outer Mongolia. If you could just get there in some place where it wasn't so mucky, you could finally do right. The problem is, friend, no matter where you go, it's mucky. Do you know what muck is? It's hard to take your stand in the middle of... Now, muck means something probably different to me than you. I remember in the farm in the spring when you're out where the cows are, and muck is not only mud, but it also has something mixed in the mud. Smells good. This was one of David's axioms, his givens, his predetermined principles. In your notes, and at the end of 2 Samuel 2:8, there was no end in sight to the challenges. So David said, all I want to do, God called me to be the king. All I want to do is go to the king and become the king in God's time and in God's way. He survived Saul. He survived a young man, but he's right back in the muck. That's 2 Samuel 2 through 4. In your notes, whatever you're standing for, first of all, some will oppose you. Some will oppose you. You will have an Abner in your life. 2 Samuel 2 says this, all the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over at the house of Judah. But Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ishbosheth to the son of Saul. And guess what he did? Later on it says in verse 10, he was 40 years old, and he began to reign over Israel, and he reigned 2 years. Now, let's look up here. Some of you have been in this church a long time, and I'm guessing some of us have never really taken a stand. I remember as a young man, you took a stand on certain things. When I was in this church, it was before I got here at 18 to 19 years old, I decided, by the way, we mentioned Prince earlier. Well, see, Prince is way past my age group. And one of my heroes died last night, Mike Rock. I thought about playing some of the music, but I figured only Mike and I would recognize it. You say, who? Well, Greg Allman, of course. You say, who? That's what I thought. By the way, friend, there came a day when I decided, look up here, no more pot smoking, no more booze, no more filthy language, no more dirty jokes, no more living like a pig or a cretin. Some of you think Pastor Warren is rough. Look at me. I have never met a sissy that ever survived. Sissies compromise. There has to come a time when you plant your flag. This is who I am. Wait a minute. I loved the Sunday morning Bible study with parenting. I'm looking at Rolando and Army, and they want to be good parents. They have a strong desire, and they have lovely children. At least I love them. Kier might be a little tough sometimes, but the rest of them are perfect. And then, let's see, Michelle and John were in there, and I know your children are perfect, Michelle. John's sipping it. By the way, you say, I want to rear my children for God. Who doesn't? Good luck. The moment you say, here I am, I'm going to rear our children, we're going to do these things, you'll meet somebody in this church that'll say, oh, that stuff's not important. Give your child, hey, Mika at least needs an iPhone, doesn't she? I think Mia needs an iPhone. Is she two? How old's your youngest daughter? Isn't 2.5 old enough for an iPhone? Hey, I bet you we have people in our school that have kids in first grade that have iPhones. Some will oppose you. There's always an Abner. You get saved, you make some hard decisions. whatever your decisions are, the issue doesn't matter. I'm going to rear my children properly. I'm going to be a good parent. I'm going to love my kids, rear my children, spend time with my kids. You're so excited. You love it. You can't wait to tell everybody. You get so excited. I can remember as a young man going back to my family and running into some of my broader family, and they looked at me like, Ralph, you've gone off the deep end. Yes, that's what they thought. My friend, when you plant your flag, you do it in muck. You don't do it in some place where you never have problems. It's down where you live, and some people will oppose you. In your notes, Abner knew what was right. For time, I'm going to skip the verses, but Abner knew who should have been the king. The text tells you he knew exactly who should be king. Next, Abner did what was wrong. Abner deliberately did what was wrong. Next, Abner did wrong. Are you ready for Abner? Frankly, folks, I don't want to bore you with tears. We'll read the first piece of this. In verse 7 of chapter 3, it says, and Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of whatever. And Ishbosheth said to Abner, wherefore hast thou gone in unto my father's concubine? Let me ask you a question. Why does a man take the concubine or the wife of the previous king? Because he wants to be king. Abner knew what was right. He knew David was supposed to be the king. He says it in two different places. He did wrong. He did wrong primarily for Abner. By the way, you're going to have people oppose you. You say, I want my children to do right. Good luck. Next page, please. Abner. Abner did a lot of wrong for a long time. He did a lot of wrong for a long time for Abner. I'm not going to read all the text. Everyone look at me. I'll just give you the principles. By the way, I got the verses for your benefit. Abner was no sweetheart. Abner decided he was going to do wrong. He had a time when some of Joab's men and some of his men fought each other. Then they had an on-running battle, and then he killed one of Joab's brothers. There was a long time that Abner decided, I'm going to do what's wrong, even though I know David's supposed to be the king. That's what he did. It's hard when people oppose you. So I'm going to ask you a question. Do you have people, even within your family, that oppose what you're doing? Don't answer that question too quickly. I ask, do you have people even within your own family who oppose what you're doing? I remember my wife and I said something years ago. We made a commitment, I don't know when, but we had decided it, our children would be in a Christian school. I remember talking to another couple. He made three times what I did in salary in St. Louis. Jenny worked, I worked part-time, because we wanted our children in a Christian school. By the way, we paid our bills. You understand that? We worked to pay them. I talked to the wife and she said that. By the way, you don't have to put your kids in a Christian school. I'm not mad if you do. I'm just saying this was our conviction. I thought people in our church would be happy for us. And I remember talking to a husband and wife and they were kind of like, now he made three times what I did, but he says, we really can't afford to put our kids in a Christian school. That's interesting. We couldn't either, but we did. Some will oppose you. Next, some will hinder you. For every Abner, there's also an Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth. He's the guy that Abner, by the way, who was the king? Abner was really the king. But Abner put Ishbosheth as the figurehead king. And for 2 years of his life, Ishbosheth reigned. Now, he and Abner had problems, they argued, and they had difficulties. Under the verses, I asked some questions. What are we to make about Ishbosheth? I think I already told you this. Ishbosheth's name, Ish, by the way, I-S-H, is one of the Hebrew words for man. Specifically, man or male. Isha is the word for woman. It's like man, woman, it's Ish, Isha. So Ish means man, and Bosheth means shame. So it means a man or a son of shame. I don't know. By the way, Mephibosheth, remember? Another son has that same Bosheth. I don't know why. I don't know if this was a nickname or not, but who would call your son man of shame? I don't know. What do we make of Ishbosheth? First of all, he was weak. A very weak man. Next, he was afraid. If you go up at verse right above this little box here, it says, and he could not answer Abner a word because he feared him. He was the king, but he knew he'd been put on the throne. And though he thought, you know, he had the name, he was afraid all of his life and all of his time against Abner. He was an accident of birth. By the way, Saul's sons were out fighting the battles. This guy must have been a wimp. And an accident of birth, he was just Saul's son. He was already 40 years old. He was already 40 years old. Now, Sparky is not here today. How long did the average person live in the ancient world? Folks, in medieval Europe, forget medieval Europe, 117 years ago in this country, the average male lived to be 46. In America, average, which meant a whole bunch of people died young and a lot of men didn't live very long. I go back into my family, some of my great-great-great-grandfather died very young. He died from things that happened in the War of 1832, Black Hawk War. A lot of men, he's 40 years old. He should have been something by now. He was probably the weakest of Saul's children, and he's 40 years old. Next, over on the other side. But he wanted power, obviously, and the things that come with power. He was a king for 2 years. And he died a miserable death. He died one of the worst deaths that could ever happen to you. Read the text. And the son of Rimmon, the Beroite, Rechab, and however you pronounce these guys' names, went and came about to the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth, who lay on a bed at noon. And they came thither into the midst of the house as though they would have fetched wheat, and they smote him under the fifth rib, and R and B, his brother, escaped. For when they came into the house, he lay on his bed in his bedchamber, and they smote him and slew him and beheaded him and took his head and gat them away through the plain all night. Please look at me. Anything you try to do, you're going to have one group, look up here, that just flat out opposes you. Ishbosheth wasn't that man. He wasn't strong enough. Some people, Tim, come up here for a minute. Can you bring your Bible up here? Would you do that? Could you do that? Would you do that? Sit here and look handsome. No, don't sit yet. Just put your Bible down. Look at me, friend. Some people are like Abner. Whatever you're doing, they're opposing you. Those people, you overcome them. You know who the worst person is? You're going through life, turn around, and you're trying to move forward, and they're the person that's always just, they're not a strong person. They're the person that walks in here. Jim DeWar told me this, my old buddy. We talked the other night. He said Rod Bell used to get so angry. He said, Jim said he didn't understand at the time. He said you'd come to church on Sunday morning, and some good old brother would come up to you and say, right before it was ready to preach, he'd say, Pastor Warren, the toilet's not flushing. By the way, do you reckon the pastor should be thinking about the toilet flushing on Sunday morning? By the way, if you're a deacon in this church, find it, fix it. Find it, fix it. If you don't want to find it and fix it, get out of the deaconship. We'll get some men that will do it. Deacons, find things, fix things. That's the nature of being a deacon. Forget that. Jim Duncan's a better deacon than a lot of men are deacons, and he finds problems and fixes problems. By the way, some people are just this. They're just dragging you all the time, hindering you. Ishbosheth wasn't a man. You understand that. Abner was the danger. Ishbosheth was an irritation. But you know there can be people that irritate you to death? Thank you. Sit down for a second here. When I was at the conference, I don't think you met them. There's a pastor there, Ryan Martin. I think he's got his doctorate from Central. Smart guy. Frenchie, this thing is weird sounding to me. Is it too loud? Is it too soft? Is it too something? I know you're perfect on all the knobs. Ryan Martin came to me and he says, Pastor Warren, you're an older pastor. I have a question. I have a friend that pastors out where he does, and he pastors, well, I don't know where these places are. He pastors 3 hours west and north of Minneapolis. I didn't know people live there. And this guy pastors out by South Dakota or someplace. I've never been there. He said, this man moved his family after graduating from seminary. He had 4 kids and a wife. He moved them to this church. And when he got there, they had promised him to take care of him. But people, he wasn't smart enough to ask, what does that mean? So he gets there, and there's one old boy. His name is Ishbosheth. Turn around. And Ishbosheth has decided, I'm going to control this guy. And Ishbosheth has a philosophy. Have you ever heard this? Lord, you keep them humble, pastors. We'll keep them poor. He paid the guy, he wants to pay the guy minimum wage. So the guy, I'm going to get to Ryan Martin's question for me. The guy humbled himself and went to his deacons and said, I cannot survive. I have 4 children, myself and a wife, on minimum wage. And this old boy is Ishbosheth. He said, I think the pastor should make about what the lowest person in the church makes. Ishbosheth. Have you met some? Yeah, I had one in St. Louis. His name was Ishbosheth. By the way, the greatest preacher in England, Jake, this is for you. The greatest pastor in England and in Europe during his day was D. Martin Lloyd-Jones. He pastored the largest church in all of Europe. 3,000 to 4,000 people, and it was not a rock and roll church. Listen to me. D. Martin Lloyd-Jones came to the church he pastored, and when he got there, I won't get into the details because of time, but this is what happened. He had an Ishbosheth that was the guy that cut the checks. And D. Martin Lloyd-Jones, which, look at me, was a medical doctor. His wife was a medical doctor that had given up medical practice for the ministry, pastored in Wales for 11 years, comes to London to the, it was 1,800 people when he got there. Then the war happened, and by the end of the war, there was really no church. So he started the church again. The church grew and grew and grew, and this guy, he would not pay D. Martin Lloyd-Jones, the greatest pastor in England, a living wage. D. Martin Lloyd-Jones says in his biography, Jake, because people would ask him, how did you deal? He says, I outlived the guy. Somewhere in the late 50s, the guy died. This is what Ryan Martin asked me. He said, as a pastor, how do you go to people and tell them you can't survive on what you're making? By the way, please hear me. Don't anybody think this is about money. For me, you're missing the whole entire point. I know how simple people think. If I wanted to say something, can't you figure out I'd say it? I'm talking about what really happened. And I looked at Ryan and I said, I have no idea. I want to say this. There's some people, they're Abner. There's other people, they're just a pain in the neck. Now, they don't see themselves that way. They think they're doing you a service. Pastor Warren, there's a window broken in the building. Okay, I have to preach. Pastor Warren. They sound like it's just one of these recordings that irritate you. Wait a minute, now I'm going to talk about you. You decide you're going to do right in your family. Hey, there's folks that aren't here tonight because honey can't stand against the other honey. Sometimes even within a family, one parent or one of the couple has to do what's right. But in most families, if one isn't doing right, what happens to the other? They don't do right either. By the way, you're going to have it. It's part of life. It's part of, here I stand. Yuck. Couldn't I find a better place to stand? No, there's only places that are mucky. That's where we live. Number 3, some will undermine you. So you have three people so far: Abner, Ishbosheth, and who's the third one? Blessed Joab. Blessed Joab. Remember, what was David standing for? I'm going to take the throne in God's way at God's time. You want to say that with me? I'm going to take the throne in God's, at God's time. That was his purpose. You have Abner saying, you're not going to be the king. You have Ishbosheth, a weak, irritating person, hanging on. And then you have the blessed Joab that decides, I'm going to undermine everything you do. David, you don't want to kill people. You tell us not to kill people, but I'll kill them anyhow. Well, 2 Samuel 2, verse 18. There were three sons of Zeruiah: Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. Asahel. How do you pronounce these names? Wow. The youngest one, or the one, was light of foot as a wild roe. I'm not going to read the passage. Please look at me. You can read it on your own. What happens? One of Joab's brothers, the light of the fast one, chased Abner. Abner kept saying, leave me alone, leave me alone, leave me alone. Get out of here. You're not prepared. And he just wouldn't do it. So Joab, the text is real weird in Hebrew. We think he just took his spear, the point this way, and stuck it backwards, and the guy ran upon it and killed this guy. Well, the problem is, even though Abner didn't want to kill this guy, Joab then said, I'm going to kill Abner. That's the backdrop. 2 Samuel 3:12. But Joab the whole time is undermining. Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, whose is the land? Saying also, make thy league with me, and behold, my hand shall be with thee to bring about all Israel unto thee. So we have Abner coming back to work with David, but Joab is in the background. You see, Abner now has changed his mind. He's going to stop opposing David, and Ishbosheth is a non-entity. Now Joab is sitting over here saying, so what you going to do with Abner, David? And Abner comes with David. And by the way, the language is very important when you see this much repetition. Verse 19, Abner also spake in the ears of Benjamin, and Abner went also to speak in the ears of David in Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel and that seemed good to the whole house of Benjamin. Verse 20, so Abner came to David to Hebron, and 20 men with him, and David made Abner and the men that were with him a feast. And Abner said unto David, I will arise and go and will gather all Israel unto my lord the king. And they made make a league or a covenant with thee, and that thou mayest reign over all that thine heart desireth. And David said to Abner, or sent him away. And here's the key phrase. And he went away in shalom, peace. Verse 22, and behold, the servants of David and Joab came pursuing a troop and brought in a great spoil with them. But Abner was not in with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in, say it with me, verse 23, when Joab and all the host that was with him were come, they told Joab, saying, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he saith, and he hath sent him away, and he has gone in what? Everyone look at me. Do you know the story? Is it a good story? Answer the question. I don't think you've read it. By the way, there was a reason I asked you to read this morning. Yep, so my old buddy Joab, David has sent Abner away in peace because David has made a commitment. Do you ever make commitments that you will not break? Look at me, is there anything in you where you have planted a flag and you say, this is who I am? Or you just kind of go with the flow. David had planted a flag. He's not going to kill Abner. He's going to send him away in peace. We're going to make an agreement. We're going to bring things back together. Well, Joab is just ecstatic. Verse 24. Then Joab came to the king and said, can you imagine doing this? What hast thou done? Behold, Abner came unto thee. Why is it that thou hast sent him away and he is quite gone? Then he even makes up his own story in his own mind. Thou knowest Abner, the son of Ner, that he came to deceive thee. and to know thy going out and thy coming in, and to know all that thou doest. Boy, if this isn't the pot calling the kettle black. Because, friend, he's saying Abner is really a deceitful guy. Within one breath, he's going to be just as deceitful as anybody. Verse 36. And when Joab was come out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, which brought him again from the well of Sirah. But David knew it not. He didn't know about this. And when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him quietly. Come over here. Look over here, folks. Look here. How are you, brother? Praying for you. Love you. Yeah. God bless the Joabs of this world. Now, look at me. I'm really going to talk about you. Wherever you plant your flag, we're going to do right. We're against this. We're for this. Look, folks, I read some stuff on music tonight. Do you understand that there are many people that will never attend Lake County Baptist Church because we're not doing this? And as long as I'm here, this church is not going to do that. We're actually going to sing music that sounds like the Bible. But wait a minute. That doesn't mean there aren't a few Abners in here that oppose that. There's definitely some real godly Ishbosheths in here that drag things down. Thanks, Tim. And there might even be a Joab. Pastor Warren, I'm your friend. Well, we continue reading. I hate to read the next section. Do you know that Joab did this again? Did you know that? See, I don't think we've read our Samuel recently. Later on, there's a guy when David's son rebels against him. His name is Amasa. And Amasa becomes basically the military leader under Absalom. After Absalom is dead, look at 2 Samuel 19:13. You can read the verses on your own. David tries to regroup with him and bring him back properly. And even say, I'll let you be the head of my military. Job, I don't trust, basically. 20 verse 4. Then said the king to Amasa, assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him. We don't know why. That's key, though, to this story. Verse 6. And David said to Abishai, now shall Sheba, the son of Bichri, do us more harm than did Absalom. Take thou thy Lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities and escape us. And there went out after him Joab's men, and the Cherethites, and the Pelethites, and all the mighty men, and they went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. Verse 8, but when they were at the great stone which is in Gibeon, Amasa went before them, and Joab's garment that he had put on was girded unto him, and upon it a girdle with the sword fastened upon his loins in the sheath thereof. And as he went forth, it fell out. Hey, it fell out. I mean, if you don't get that, you're missing the point of the story. And Joab said to Amasa, come over here, Tim. How you doing, brother? How you feeling? How's your health? It was good right before you killed me. By the way, Joab was the underminer of David most of David's life. I hope you understand this, friend. Well, I'm not going to tell you what happened to Joab because I know you know. You can read 2 Kings and find out yourself, the second chapter. We come to the end of the story. Everyone look up here for a moment. Tonight is too many verses, but here's the story. David planted his flag. I'll become king in God's time and in God's way. We agree with that. Now, what we're talking about is you planting your flag. This is who I am, so help me God. But remember, it's always in the muck. There are some people that oppose you. There are some people that are just irritants. They just have a way of getting under your skin, dragging you down for whatever reason. And then there might be a few people that come alongside and really try to help you, like Brother Joab. Love you, Joab. How many of you need friends like Joab? Joab was always undermining. Number 4, Frenchie asked me the question. He's very astute, in case you don't know. I told him he's what Frank Pasolacqua used to say, Mike. You should remember this. Frank Pasolacqua used to have a saying he said all the time. When someone said what Frenchie said to me, he would say, "You have a keen eye for the obvious." Some is in parentheses. I'm going to hope that some, in your case, means many. Some, thank God, will understand you. Some will understand you, and hopefully many. Friend, look up here again. I want to tie it to David's story. I will be king in God's time, in God's way. Abner opposes me. Ishbosheth irritates me and hinders me. Joab is killing people, undermining me. But through it all, many of the people started to recognize that David, at least here, had principles that he stood for. Some people, maybe quite a few, started to recognize there was something different about David. We'll quickly look at some of the highlighted parts. Verse 26. When Joab came out from David, he met with Abner, and it says in the text, I highlighted, but David knew it not. And afterwards, verse 28, when David heard it, he said, I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Verse 32, the highlighted part, the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept, and the king lamented over Abner. You see, this was who David was. Verse 36, and all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them. And whatsoever the king did pleased all the people. For all the people and all Israel understood that day that it was not of the king to slay Abner, the son of Ner. My friend, I pastor this church at your pleasure. I am very grateful that I have a group in this church, many of them are here right now, that I know one thing, I can count on them. Many pastors don't have that. I'm pretty sure I can count on Mike Hall. I'm pretty sure I can count on this guy. I can count on Dada, those three guys, always. I'm not going to go around the room and talk to everybody's names, but you got to hear me. You don't understand. When you realize you're in a pastor, you're only a pastor if the people want to go the direction you're going. But hold on, I don't want to talk about me. You say, you guys want to have a godly family. You love your daughters. I love those girls. Who couldn't? You're going to have people here, and I hope most of the people here are cheering you guys on. Same with you, John. You'll have some that oppose you. You'll have probably some people that come along and hinder you. You might even have people in broader family that undermine you, but thank God you're going to have people here that stand with you. We want what's best for your children. I want to see these two girls in a few years, what we showed on the board today. Maybe you're in the military, maybe you're not, but if you're in the military, you're making Lieutenant Junior grade. If you're not in the military, you're graduating from college. Yes? By the way, is that everybody's dream in this room? Absolutely not. But I will say, please look at me, but it is the dream of the vast majority of people in this room. So when I look at this text, Frenchie, keen eye for the obvious, for me, most people, I believe, understand me and what I'm doing. David came to that place. I think most people in this room want what we want. What do you think? That isn't always the case. I'm going to read the last part. Remember how Ishbosheth got killed? They went into his house and did what? Murdered him and cut off his head. How did David react to that? Hold it. You haven't read it. How do you think David's going to react to that? What are his axioms? I will not take the kingdom by my own hands. I'll do it in God's time and in his way. Yes? Well, let's see what he says. The last section, 2 Samuel 4:9. David answered R and B, his brother, the sons of Rimmon the Bechorite, Beerothite, good grief, and said unto them, As the Lord liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity, when one told me, saying, behold, Saul is dead, thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought that I would have given a reward for his tidings. By the way, that interprets, David later on knows what that young man was about. He didn't know at the time. How much more? When wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed, shall I not therefore now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth? And this is not the rapture, by the way, friend. And David commanded his young men, and they slew them and cut off their hands and feet and hanged them up over the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron. Now, please look at me, and I'm almost done. From 1 Samuel 16 to 2 Samuel 5, one huge theme. David, you want to be king? David says yes. I'm planting my flag. I will be king in God's time and in God's way. Everything was against it. And when we get into chapter 2, 3, and 4, Abner's opposing. Ishbosheth is, he's an irritant. Joab is undermining. But thank God, at the end of the day, look at me, most of the people, they look past Abner, they look past Joab, they look past Ishbosheth, and they knew David wanted the right thing in the right way. And my friend, I'll close with this. Tonight, I think most of you know what we want. Some of us want it more than others. But I will promise you this, if you're part of this church, we want that for your kids and for your family. God's best. Let's pray. Father, thank you.